This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
There's so many insane elements to this case. Another one is what the jury never heard. Let's talk about that. A jury convicted Richard Allen of murdering Abby Williams and Libby German, but according to the appeal, that jury was operating with one hand tied behind its back. They never saw Betsy Blair's sketch, the one that she rated 10 out of 10 for accuracy that looked nothing like Allen. They never heard expert testimony challenging the reliability of the state's bullet matching methodology. They never learned that the state's detail only the killer would know was actually contradicted by the state's own defense. They never heard the audio of Allen screaming incoherently in solitary while the state claimed his confessions were logical and organized. And they never heard a word about Brad Holder, Patrick Westfall, or the extensive investigation into whether this was a ritualistic killing connected to Norse paganism. The trial court excluded all of it. Bob Mata is with us to talk about this other ball of shit in this case that that makes the case just as outrageous as it's getting more outrageous as we learn more, I think, over time, especially with the new appellate briefs that are out. Let's start with that, the sketch. This is a big one. Betsy Blair, she's the key eyewitness to Bridge Guy. She worked with the sketch artist 3 days after the murder, and she said she could identify Bridge Guy if she saw him again, but the jury never saw the sketch. How does excluding it affect Allen's ability to argue mistaken identity if they can't even get the damn thing into court? Let's talk about these pieces that were never shown to a jury.
I'd be so pissed if I were on that jury. If I heard all of this now, I would be effing livid at this point.
I don't know, because like these people that were on this jury, you know, when you're on a jury, Stacey, you want to walk away from that thing feeling like you fucking got it right. And your brain is going to work in ways that is going to justify that you did it right. It's like a situation where I think there's enough to pound them over the head to show that you fucked it up, but you've got to be willing to do that work and to do that listening as a juror who's convicted somebody in order to get there. And I don't know that any of these jurors are in that position. We've only heard one of them talk, which to me,
that might be telling in itself right there.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're right. Exactly.
People don't want to go and raise a flag going, I think we fucked that up. Typically, when you see the jurors talk, they're usually like, we think we did the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've only heard one of them speaking. So that thing not coming in, the first sketch, and the second sketch didn't come in either.
No.
You know, and in terms of the judge's reasoning as to why, I don't really know. You know,
there doesn't seem to be a lot of reasoning.
I don't know. Like, you know, it's like, is it a hearsay situation? Because, I mean, like, people always think hearsay is words. Hearsay can be pictures. It can be composite sketches. It could be, you know, these were out of court statements made by Betsy Blair. And theoretically, the defense would be arguing she gave it a 10 out of 10. Yeah. We are offering it for the truth of the matter that fucking composite, you know, that composite is representing the truth of the matter that it asserts, that is who she said she saw. And that fucking guy isn't our client, you know? So like that, and that's why, and the other part of it is she's testifying. They can ask her, okay, well, what was the person that you described, which they did, but it doesn't have the same impact, does it? In terms of having Betsy Blair on the stand saying, okay, well, you know, he was boyish, young, 20s, maybe 30, you know, poofy brown hair, youthful face, you know, and it's like, you're sitting here, you're looking at nearly bald Richard Allen, buzz cut, you know, fucking 5'4", nothing youthful looking about him. And it just like completely different dude.
I know.
You know, and like the bigger frustration for me is, and that is, I think, something that when you kind of look at everything, Tony, and this is one of my criticisms of the brief, and again, I think they did yeoman's work, because what you realize is that with 24,000 words, it goes quick, man. And yeah. You've got to pick your poisons. You've got to, like, every word matters.
They were limited to
14, Stace, and they filed for an motion for extension of an additional 10,000 words. So originally this case that has so many issues was going to be limited to 14,000 words, and they got the extra 10,000. So you have to pick your poisons. But the one thing that I would have loved to have seen is just some cumulative argument that, okay, each of these little things in and of themselves, appellate court judges, maybe you think that they're all independently harmless error. But when you look at them cumulatively together, it becomes clear on what happened here. And they just didn't really make that argument. And I don't, like, I mean, it exists without them saying it, but I don't know if that kind of waves the issue moving forward. So, you know, like I'm sitting there at the trial, Tony, and they don't ask one single eyewitness. Do you see the man that you saw on the trails that day in the courtroom?
How do you not ask that?
Could you point him out for us?
They even do that on shows on TV. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's an in-court identification.
God.
That
yeah.
If you're confident, if you're coming in and trying a guy on the up and up, if you fucking believe that you got the guy, then why aren't you getting an in-court ID? If you feel like, even if you know that they're gonna say, I don't know. I can't say with 100% certainty that he's the guy. What, like, one says he has a face covering. Betsy's like, he doesn't seem like. If you feel so confident in your other evidence that Richard Allen did this, then why aren't you trying the case on the up and up? And then I can ask the same question to the defense attorneys. I'm not giving them a pass here. Why the fuck didn't you ask them? Because you know what? In Indiana, you get to depose every single person. And we don't get that opportunity in Illinois. I go in blind. I go in on police reports, rarely having the opportunity to ever talk to state witnesses, because they call the state and they say, hey, there's some lawyer fucking at my door. What should I do? State's attorney can't tell them. You don't talk to him. Fucking try. Mm-hmm. What they say is, well, you know, you're testifying on our behalf and it's your choice. You can tell them to go fuck off. You have no obligation to talk to them. And that's what they do most of the time. In Indiana, you get to put them under oath and sit in a room with them and depose them and ask them, here's my client. This is a photograph of our client, the guy they've arrested for this crime when Betsy Blair's sitting at the depth table. Mm-hmm. Slide across. Is this the fucking guy that you saw?
Yeah.
And Betsy Blair answers the question.
Missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. My God. Or are they afraid of the answer? Is where you're like, which is true. A legitimate thing. I mean, because it exists in the world.
Because at some point, did they convince Betsy that this is the person you saw, too? I mean, you're rolling the dice there, and it's been all those years. The other thing on this is that damn bullet. And it just baffles me that this even got as far as it did, which is like the only piece of evidence, and I put that in air quotes because it's not. You have the bullet, the unspent round that did not match when they cycled it through the gun, because they did it the same way. Unspent round, cycle it through, no match. How do they get the match? They fired the bullet. Completely different method. Completely different. It's in no way the same sort of thing. And then they say, see, it matches. Yes, you fired the round. That's not the same damn thing. But somehow, in magic land of Delphi, this is admissible evidence, and we're no way in hell going to let the defense expert in here, William Tobin, the nationally recognized forensic metrologist who's testified in 297 cases about the scientific community's criticism of this methodology. No, no, he can't come in and say anything. We're just going to do this where it's really not even truly the same damn thing. It's apples to oranges. And we're going to say, see, it's a match, everybody. And this is what the jury is going to believe, because they're presented it to them in a very skewed way. I'm just, I don't know, there's so many elements to this. This is another obviously key one to this case, where if this was explained adequately to a jury, I don't think we would have Richard Allen in prison.
Yeah.
So here's, this will make you feel better, T. Just remember, Oberg, the state's expert, their tool marking expert, mm-hmm. She's never been wrong, buddy. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. She's never been wrong.
She's never been wrong, buddy.
Never it's been okay. wrong. That's
it's
what they
okay,
said.
G. She's never yeah. been wrong.
Never so, been challenged either, but yeah, never been, I, never like had I, the work reviewed.
I mean, I sat there at that trial, okay, every fucking day, you know, and we got this dude, Hunter Johnson, in here, who's like a super troll. It's been in my chat. I don't know who he is. He's calling us sick fucks.
Let's block him.
Yeah, I mean, like, were you at the trial, dude? Do you know anything about this case, or are you just that guy? You know, it's like at this point, like, this isn't a fucking game.
No.
There's a guy in prison who I believe with all of my heart is innocent.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't a fucking joke. This isn't some social media bullshit. This no. isn't Twitter. This isn't no. some. This is a real life thing that we're watching in real time. And we live in a world in which we now have the ability to be able to comment on it. Thankfully.
And don't forget, it could be any one of us sitting in this chat, yeah. in this video right yeah. now. It could be any one of us. If you live in this country, this should concern you. It should concern yeah. you in other countries, but especially here, because it's not supposed to fucking yeah. happen here.
If you went for a hike all. That day and you raised your hand and said, how can I help? I was down there.
Exactly.
This is what happened to him.
Yep.
it's insane. Man, it's such an insane case.
So I got sidetracked because I saw that dude. And I've got a lot of our fam in chat today.
And they sure. love your haircut, by the way. Somebody said, oh, Bob, no hat.
I know. I decided to go hatless. So I, sitting there watching Oberg testify, Tony, was insane. I don't know any other way to put it other than it was insane. Because she gets up there, they show like three pictures of the significant agreement, you know, and then she goes to great lengths with McClelland on direct to say, I don't want the jury to look at these pictures because it's a snapshot of everything that I looked at. Like, I couldn't possibly show you everything that I took into consideration in order to reach the decision that there was significant agreement between the round that I fired with all that pressure that causes a projectile to fly through the barrel of a gun. When I compared it to the ejected round that just popped out and I found significant agreement, she did this. She went to such lengths to say, I just don't want you to look at the pictures because it's not what I use. It's a microscopic portion of what I relied on in reaching this conclusion. And I was sitting there. I'm like, what is this fucking woman sitting there with like a trust me, bro? Like, is that what she's doing right now? Trust me, bro. I've never been wrong. Trust me, bro. You're going to have to just take my word. I don't want you to look at those pictures because that's
don't check the work.
Dude, and look, Rosie did the best that he could, and he did a really nice job on that cross. And you know, and they had their own expert. But I knew that was coming in Indiana. Like everybody that I talked to that practiced in Indiana, I was like, that shit's coming in. Like she's not like, even if it wasn't Gull, that unspent round and the state was going to be able to put an expert on, So that wasn't necessarily like a gull thing.
It's just, I expect the expert to be an expert, right, and be presenting accurate work. You know, and that's apples to oranges bullshit. That's not what I expect from an expert. That's what I expect from someone who doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. Yeah. And like, well, this doesn't work. This is not the same. Oh, okay. I was unaware of that. I'm not an expert, but this is an expert. They should be like, yes, completely different things. You can't compare the two. It's not going to be an accurate comparison, period. Right.
Full stop. And the one thing that I think in relation to that, her barring the metallurgist that they were trying to call, the defense was trying to call, would have explained the concept of pressure and heat and how it affects metal. Would have been very helpful to a jury in understanding the difference between racking around out of the top of your weapon firing it. And she denied that. So like that's a part of it where I think the appellate court's going to be like, you know what? That's kind of a problem. That's something that I think the judge erred on. So the question then becomes, is it harmless error? You know, because I like that. That's always what it's going to boil down to. Because if it's structural error, that means it's a redo. If we find that something on its face is violative of the law and just flat out wrong, it's structural error, the analysis stops there, and this guy gets a new trial. Yeah. I don't know. Like, Michael Losbrook has identified something that he firmly believes was structural error, and it wasn't necessarily argued in this appeal. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I trust the lawyers that are handling the appeal for Richard Allen. They're excellent appellate attorneys.
Yeah.
They went through this record, you know, and you have to simply trust that they picked what they felt in their experience was the strongest issues in terms of hoping to get him a new trial. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that whole remanding it for a Franks hearing to go back to the first thing that we talked about. And I know that you clip these, T, but like, you're going in front of Gull.
Yeah.
That's going to have no impact. If they say, okay, we're going to remand it for the Franks, which is a weird thing to think, he's sitting there convicted. They're saying, okay, we're going to send it back to have her, force her to do the hearing. What do you think the result of that's going to be?
Exactly. Everything was damned if you do, damned if you don't in this because of her.
Yeah.
But my God, it's going to be an interesting year, 2026, to see what transpires next in all this. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries. Check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube as well. And if you're looking for another one to listen to right now,
Buried the John Wayne Gacy Investigation. I let you
know there, big guy. Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation, also available wherever you get podcasts. Very, very greatly. I love the production on it. You did a great job on that.
Thank you, my friend.
Go check that out as well.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. That's going to wrap up this episode of the program. So for Stacy, for Todd, for Bob, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.